Hey there, everybody. Welcome to a anniversary edition of Kayfabe Wrestling Radio. I say anniversary because it is March 26th, and besides the celebration of my wife's 29th birthday again this day, we also sit and celebrate what was, for me and a lot of wrestling fans, the saddest day in wrestling. And it didn't have to do with the death of a superstar. It had to do with the death of a company. That it's amazing to think, fans, 15 years ago today was the last WCW Monday Nitro in Panama Beach, Florida, which of course was simulcast with WWE and Shane McMahon, and if you watch the network, you know everything that's going to go on. But there's one person that magically was omitted from the Monday Night War show, and I got him. He is, I always joke when he's on the show, he was a groomsman in my wedding and was grateful for him. And it's amazing to think that I've been friends with him for 13 years now. He is the one and only Scott Hudson, joining us on Kayfabe Wrestling Radio.
Hey, Alan, man, I got to tell you, I love life here in the home. The nurses are fantastic. The pudding is good. The prune juice is always warm. When the kids come by and sing, it's just wonderful.
when you sit there and you just think about the way I just said that, 15 years has passed since WCW is gone, but now lives on through the network that all these years of Monday Nitro are there, and even the Jim Crockett years that you got to attend as a fan. What do you think of the legacy so far? Before we even talk about the Monday Night War show itself, what do you think of the network and the way that they've embraced the old school WCW Jim Crockett Promotions?
Well, that's a great question, and there's a reason why it's finally doing so well. They have decided that, even though they'll never admit it, that their current product is not good enough to support that platform, that they have to go back into their videotape library. And I think they knew this all along. I think they were just keeping this in their, you know, in their hip pocket, you know, in case of emergency, you know, like a little, you know, hammer and fire extinguisher in your office that you break the glass in case it all goes to hell. Well, they broke the glass and started showing old stuff out of their library, and they've got tons more. Remember, they still have, I think they still have the AWA stuff out there. They've got a lot more old Georgia Championship, Florida Championship. I don't think they ever got the UWF stuff. I'm not sure, but they've got Calgary. They've got a lot of historical wrestling programming that they can show, and that's what's going to keep it afloat. Is that continually adding digital versions of those old. Those old television programs. That's what will keep them afloat. It's a very smart move. I just wish they had not decided early on that, you know, whatever Live from Mean Gene's Grotto or whatever that show was, you know, those kind of things are going to support the network. It wasn't. That this is what's going to keep the network afloat.
Have you seen, I know you lived it, because a lot of folks have always said, well, I don't need to watch that program. I've lived that thing. I don't care. Have you seen the Monday Night Wars thing, and what did you think of it when you saw it?
Well, it's and you and I have had this conversation off the air before, that, you know, to the victor go the spoils, and whoever wins the war gets to write the history. It doesn't matter if it's accurate or not. And, you know, we see in God, the DVD releases and the show, everything that has to do with Nitro versus Raw is going to be skewed greatly towards the WWE side. But it should be. They won. And that's just the way it goes. You know, if we had won, we would have buried them. We would have shown nothing but T.L. Hopper and the Goon and the Dr. Drosy footage. But they won. They get to, you know, show all this, you know, Mike Awesome, the Fat Chick Fuller and all that, and Judy Bagwell and all that stuff. So, you know, that's the way it goes. That's business. That's war. It's called the Monday Night Wars for a reason. We didn't have, you know, weapons, obviously, and not to diminish the efforts of our fighting men and women, or anyway compare it to real war. But, you know, if you win the war, you get to write the history, and they're writing it.
Have you been contacted, or were you ever contacted to be a part of it? Because it was amazing to watch those shows and see people that I never thought in a million years, like Tony Schiavone, Larry Zbysko, Vince Russo, of all people. I was stunned to see these people a part of that Monday Night War show. Were you ever contacted? And if so, what would you have, or not, would you have said yes to doing it?
Let's put it this way. I was not contacted. But I didn't need to be. I had made it crystal clear that I wanted nothing to do with that company in any way, shape, form, or fashion. Period. Don't ask. So they didn't ask. Like, oh, you know, that's great. They knew the answer, so they didn't, and I told them not to ask, and they didn't. So, no, I wasn't contacted, and no way in hell would I have done it.
Were you surprised when you saw former like I said, Larry Zbysko, from having met him thanks to you at the Jeff Peterson Memorial Cup we did, he had always said to people, he's like, they're never gonna have anything to do with me. And not only is he doing that, he ends up in their Hall of Fame. Were you surprised to see a lot of WCW people that weren't current WWE stars a part of the shows?
No, and you've been around the business long enough. You know, you never say never. And can count on me always saying never to them. But, you know, a TNA reunion show, a WCW reunion show, oh, yeah, I'll be there today. But working for or with the WWE, no. But those guys, they do their own thing. And if they have their own motivations, I have no idea what it is, but I love those guys to death. And if they want to do it, more power to them. That doesn't change my opinion of them in the slightest. They're my heroes and my mentors and the people that taught me more about this business. They've forgotten more about the business than they taught me, I can tell you that. And if that's where they want to be and what they want to do, that's cool. But my integrity and my professional status mean way more to me than showing up and talking about how, you know, the artist formerly known as Prince Iaukea was an underrated gimmick. I don't need that.
It's amazing that, as I said, it's 15 years later, and yet when you look at that network and you see Sting going into the Hall of Fame, how well his DVD sold, how well volumes 1, 2, and I think 3 exists of the WCW Monday Nitro shows exist, all this. Yeah, but WCW is so bad, it's just amazing to me as a fan to just, I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't. And you need to look no deeper than message boards or social media. And I understand the IWC mythos and conspiracy theories and all that, but the people that dogged WCW back in the day now look at what the WWE is putting out, not wholly, because a lot of the stuff they do is really good, but some of it is just utter crap, and, you know, they're losing money, the ratings are tanking, and they look back at WCW and think, you know, that really wasn't that bad, and then they do a little checking and realize that at our worst, we were drawing about the same rating that they're drawing now for Raw, and they realize, you know, God, maybe we should have given WCW, you know, not even a chance. Maybe we should have just watched and enjoyed it instead of always picking it apart. Maybe we would still have them to kick around some more. We could have real competition, and, you know, WCW could be drawing, Nitro could be drawing a 3 rating, and Raw could be drawing a 5 rating, but then all's right with the world, and we've got real competition and a real choice. But as it is now, you know, we get, you know, the League of Nations.
Exactly. A lot of folks point to 2000 when Ferrara and Russo showed up as the beginning of the end. We've talked about it, and you lived it. Kevin Sullivan, the wrestler, not the producer of Global Force Wrestling, when we had him on, he said he knew around 1998, before even Goldberg won the championship from Hollywood Hogan in the Georgia Dome, that he turned to Terry Taylor and said, brother, we're at the bottom of the Titanic. We hit the iceberg. We're taking on water and nobody upstairs knows it yet. Do you think that was around when things started to go off the rails, or was it even earlier than middle of 98?
Well, in all honesty, if Kevin Sullivan said it, I believe it. I haven't given it that much thought, but I hold that guy in about as high regard as anybody. And if that's what he thinks, then there's probably a great deal of truth to it. When I saw it turning was the, when they ended Goldberg's streak and went to the finger poke of doom. And maybe Kevin knew that was coming, and it's entirely possible that he did. But when Goldberg beat Hogan, I wouldn't say that was the beginning of the end. That's my opinion. And again, I'll defer to Kevin. He's a genius. But I do know that when we ended Goldberg's streak, we weren't coming back from that. Not because it ended the streak, but because of the way it was done.
Did he... I want to word this the right way, because I do have respect for Bill Goldberg and the fact that he was put in the position and he was just doing what he was asked to do, but did he need the streak? Was he as a performer that weak, as we hear from folks, that he could barely get through a 5-minute match? Heaven forbid he was a main event and at a house show, and oh God, now he's going to go 15, 20 minutes. Was the streak a good thing early on for him, or was it a bad idea?
Well, keep in mind that the streak with Goldberg, two things. Number one, it was almost an accident. It was something Tanay had during commentary. And remember, famously, the streak would grow by 18 or 20 matches in the course of a week. When Goldberg had wrestled like 3 or 4 matches, and all of a sudden the streak is up to 25, now it's 34, and he's wrestled 4 matches. So, it was almost an accident, but because of what Mike had come up with. Mike's also an incredibly smart, creative guy. And number two, back in the 80s, and I'm sure you remember this, or at least have read about it, look on the network and find it, that's what they did with Magna. They didn't give him the streak so much as they gave him, he won every match inside of like 8 seconds. He enters the ring, the bell rings, he shoots the guy in, hits the belly to belly, and gets the pin.
Yep.
And that's how they got Magnum over. Magnum was certainly more talented in the ring than Goldberg, and I'm not breaking any new ground by saying that. But Goldberg was not that weak. It was just a way to get him over. He was an incredible athlete, and could have been carried. Had he been in there with somebody that could carry him to a 15-minute match, and Hogan certainly could. I mean, hell, Hogan carried Warrior for 20-something minutes in Mania. So, yeah, Hogan could do that. And Goldberg's 10 times the wrestler Warrior was. But Goldberg was no slouch as a talent. He may not have achieved his level of notoriety and his push because of his talent. It may have been just because. But regardless, he wasn't a slouch. He wasn't somebody just being like Zeus, somebody being pushed to the main event just because of their look and in spite of their work. He was good and could have been great.
Another marker that a lot of folks talk about, and of course it was mentioned on NWO The Revolution DVD, which I proudly own. Yes, I was an NWO white back in the day, and it's funny to see these kids walking around.
It's fun. I always wondered who it was that bought that thing.
It's always funny to see these kids that look at these factions. They're like, oh, the League of Nations is great. The Shield is great. I was like, yeah, neither one of them launched Rey Mysterio into a building and a lawn dart and had people at Disney World thinking it was a real riot going on.
That was the old Larry Zbysko line. That was perfect.
Was that... And they also did it on the Legends of Wrestling in that format. Was Kevin Nash and Jim Ross had said, that streak, that gimmick, that angle could have gone 4 years. Was the watering down of the New World Order that was the original Hall, Nash, Hogan? You had Big Show for a little while there. X-Pac, Ted DiBiase is the mouthpiece. Then he leaves. Then Bischoff comes in, and then you had Kurt Hennig for a while and Rick Rude. What was the point that just, it was like, oh my God, I know Mike Katz in the New World Order, for heaven's sake.
Yeah. Well, the original angle was Eric, and that's no secret, and Eric is another genius. He always had the big idea, what he would refer to as the umbrella angle. Mm-hmm. The angle that covered the entire company, that everything else worked underneath, and that was, you know, the new blood versus the Millionaires Club and all that later on. But the NWO was that idea, and if you remember and think through it logically, it all makes sense. In that Scott showed up first, and you know, didn't give his name and said you want a war, and he was basically in the Razor Ramon character, so it looked like an invasion angle. And then Kevin shows up, and what Eric and them hit on was any ex-WWF guy of any renown, we'll put him in the NWO, because this is still, in the back of the fans' mind, a WWF invasion of WCW.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. It was just that simple, and it worked like a charm. But then there were so many ex-patriot WWF guys available that it just blew up into, you know, into a Trump rally, for God's sake. There were that many people in it. and then we started putting our own guys, Conan and Buff Bagwell and people like that in it, that it just kind of, and then we had to split off into the Wolf Pack and the Black and White and all that. And then it was going to fizzle out, as every big angle like that does, but it lasted for 2 years, 3 years, maybe. Really
close.
The Bret Hart part of the NWO, getting the band back together and stuff. That was a decent run. But you're right. Your language was perfect. It was watered down, and its impact, what to coin a phrase, was rapidly declining. But we transitioned right into having Goldberg on top, and then having the New Blood and Millionaires Club. So we weathered the storm, but killing Goldberg. Which should be actually a Bill O'Reilly book. I got to write that. He should do a book called Killing Goldberg. But that's when things started to go south, and we couldn't come back from that. We didn't have the creative juices. We had talent dictating their angles and their schedules and their dates, and it was a perfect storm, and it just exploded.
I got creative control, brother. From that night in Panama City. For fans that may not have listened to us do interviews before, give them something that you remember the most from that day in Panama City.
Well, we knew, you know, going in that it was the last show. You know, we knew that day that there wasn't going to be another Nitro. Up until a couple of days before that, we didn't know that. But we did know at least before everything started cranking up. But when we got there and we saw Shane and we saw Bruce Pritchard and Jimmy Hart, who was, I think, already back up there, or had ties with them and was kind of had more of a voice than he usually did, you know, that we knew. And then when we go to the production meeting and we go over the format, and the format stops at, you know, whatever, 9:15, 9:30, or an 8 o'clock show that's supposed to go to 11 or whatever it was, you know, we knew. And after, the one takeaway I have was just saying goodbye to everybody. Because regardless of what happened, we knew that was going to be the last day we were all together on our same team. That if something happened and the WWF at the time decided to bring everybody up north and we all were doing Nitro again as a separate brand the next week, it wasn't going to be the same thing. Might be called the same show with the same talent, but we knew it wasn't going to be the same, and then eventually we knew that wasn't going to happen. But we knew that that was our last day. And it was a job. Everybody listening to this podcast, you, me, everybody, you know, we have jobs. You know, we work, and we're doctors, lawyers, accountants. We, you know, we work in construction. We work at a convenience store, a department store. We have a job. We have a career. And if all of a sudden the business for whom you work goes under, it's a tough day. not only do you lose your job and lose your income, that's hard enough, but you lose the people with whom you spend more time than your own family. And that's what it was. We were all backstage. And backstage is basically, you know, hotel rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were at Club La Vila and having to stay at a resort about a half a block down the street there in Panama City Beach. You know, and there's just tears. Tears all over the place. The crew, the talent, the announcing guys, the refs, you know, you name it. We were all just hanging all over each other. I mean, you know, I've enjoyed it. I'm going to miss you. You know, stay in touch. God, good luck to you. You're fantastic. You're a great talent. That's what it was. That was my takeaway. And I guess that to a degree, seeing Flair and Sting one more time, I've heard Flair's take on, you know, he had to wear a shirt because he was in such terrible physical shape. But, you know, whatever. That I appreciate Rick and everything he did. I don't want to remember that part of his story. I just want to remember that they gave it their all one last time. But for me, it was saying goodbye to everybody. It was the people that I'd worked with, people that I'd had catering with, and people I'd ridden on the roads with. And that was the hardest part. That was the takeaway. It still gets to me. 15 years later, you never forget those moments.
Now, 14 years have gone by since the birth of one of your other former announcing locations, and that would be NWA, TNA, TNA, Impact Wrestling, which for a while there, it was really great to be a fan because they announced, all right, we're going to put all the Asylum Years stuff on YouTube for everybody to watch. And I said, yes, I love this. And then now it costs me 99 cents to watch this thing. What did you think when you first heard? Yeah, Asylum Years on. All right, YouTube. Wait, what?
Are you kidding me? I would get up on, you know, on, I don't know when they uploaded them, but I would go
Thursdays
morning and just dial it up on my smart TV and watch. It was terrific. then you know you have to pay for this subscription service on the YouTube channel. But before we started this tonight. I said I had a theory on that, and here it is.
Yeah.
When TNA started back in, I guess it would have been 2002, they were marketing weekly pay-per-views for
$9.99, bro.
Sounds familiar. And that, so what they would, what I suggested to them at the time, even though I wasn't working for them, I was still tight with Jeff and Vince and everybody and Bob and Jeremy, that I said, you know, you're offering people 8 hours a month of pay-per-view quality wrestling for $40. When the WWE or WWF then is offering 3 hours for the same price, you should say, you know, you're getting a bargain with us. You're getting more than double the amount of pay-per-view level or caliber wrestling for the same price. And they okay, we'll try that. And the pay-per-view company was like, no way. We are not going to market this thing because of its cheap price. That makes
sense. Wow.
We're not doing it. So now what you're seeing is TNA, and I'm not a numerologist or anything like that, but here they are offering counter-programming to the $9.99 network for one-tenth of the price. You know, you can see 14-year-old pay-per-view quality wrestling for one-tenth of the price of the network, and anybody that pays 99 cents to watch that is insane.
Mm.
I mean, just literally insane. You can pay 10 times that, and I'm sure that would be their tagline if they wanted to use this DNA. You can pay 10 times to get the network. Well, with the network, I get, what is it up to now, like 6,000 hours of programming a month?
Something like that.
And or you could just get, you know, 2 hours.
When you look at the current, and I'm not even sure if you do, when you look at the current product that's there, where they're not even running house shows, they're doing TV, and that's it, and all the talent is pretty much just working all these indie dates. Are you surprised that 14 years later, that now there was supposedly a thing that they're looking for outside business partners and this and that? are we slowly seeing the demise of our company that we started? You know, we were there for the first shows, and now it's like, oh my God, this thing may be gone.
I didn't lose a dime on it, so I don't know if we started it, but probably. I mean, everything is cyclical. You know, WCW lasted from 1988, I guess, from the Turner buyout until 2001. That's 13 years. TNA has already lasted longer than WCW did. So, we probably are. Everything's going to go in cycles. The WWE will always be there. The question will be, will they be in the form that we see them now in 20 years, or will they be bigger, or will they be smaller? But they'll be there. But TNA, unfortunately, I don't think so. Global Force Wrestling, they're at least going about it the right way. They're not shooting for the moon, you know, and settling for the top of the tallest tree. They're starting small and, you know, with an indie kind of feel to it, and, you know, seeing what they can do. They may not make it either, but at least they're doing it the right way.
Yeah, which they're also amazing. 14 years later, they're doing good. And hey, they own their own TV network, which you guys did. But I don't think they're spending $500,000 on a guy to sit at home, brother. No, nobody's getting Sting money this day and age, but we sadly are out of time, which totally sucks right now, but we want to thank Scott Hudson for being with us. Stay with us here on KFAB Wrestling Radio, powered by GoreWreck.net, Pro Wrestling Between the Sheets, and don't forget Rick Santos' Weekend Warrior blog. Thanks to Scott for being with us. We will see you at the matches, and thanks for being with us from the Sunshine State.